I call this meeting to order. All the representatives of the commission are present. I'm Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounoulakis. I'm joined in person today by State Controller Malia Cohen. And we are also joined by Michelle Perrot, representing the Department of Finance.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum present. In addition, I'd like to identify members of the staff of the commission meeting participating virtually for this hybrid meeting. Kim Lunetta is our meeting liaison. Thank you.
Thank you, Grace. For the benefit of those in the audience, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The commission also has responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms and islands, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the commission's jurisdiction. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude to the Nisenan, Wintun, Miwok, and Maidu people who have inhabited the Sacramento River corridor, valley, and foothills for countless generations. I also want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the land we now share. Native people have maintained constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. The next item of business will be public comment. Before I open the public comment period for items not on the agenda, first let me thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public, for taking the time to join our meeting. Now, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Cato to quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in this meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible. Ms. Cato?
Thank you, Chair Kounoulakis. There are two public comment sessions today. We will take public comment during the first session for a maximum of 30 minutes due to the extent of our agenda. Our second public comment session will occur near the end of the meeting. If you would like to speak during the public comment period, please complete an electronic request to speak form, which is available on our homepage. For both sessions, we will take members of the public who are here first in person and then hear comments from those who are participating virtually. We will call on you in the order which you've submitted the electronic request to speak form. For those of you who are participating virtually, please make sure to have your microphones or your phones muted to avoid background noise. To help us call on you through the Zoom platform, please raise your hand during the appropriate comment section in one of two ways. If you are attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you are new to Zoom and you've joined our meeting through the application, please click on the hand icon at the bottom of the screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you're joining via phone, you must press *9, not #9, but *9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. If you're calling in and you want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please make sure you view the meeting through the CalSPAN Live website link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback from using the Zoom application and your phone. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the name they registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. You may receive a pop-up indicating you are being promoted to a panelist. Please be sure to accept that invitation. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so you can share your comments. Please remember to unmute your computer or your phone and identify yourself. You will have a limit of 3 minutes to speak on an item. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow these guidelines or, at worst, dismiss them from the meeting. I also want to remind everyone we have two general public comment opportunities, and if anyone is having any logistical or technical difficulties, you can reach out to our help desk at slc.helpdesk@slc.ca.gov and know that you will be given an opportunity to provide comments at the second public comment period later. The commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. The address is slc.commissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. We have received various emails from parties that have been shared with the commissioners prior to the meeting. If we receive any emails during this meeting time, they will be shared with the commissioners and made available on our website, along with public comment emails we have already received. Chair Kunalakis, that concludes my hybrid meeting instructions, and we're ready to move to the general public comment period.
Thank you very much, Grace. Our next order of business is the public comment period. I would just like to note that depending on how many speakers we have, we sometimes do change the length per speaker in order to be able to accommodate more of the speakers, again, depending on how many we have. So we'll just have to assess that in a moment. So if anyone would like to address the commission on any matter not on today's agenda, staff will call on those who are here in person first. Next, we will move on to those joining us virtually. Katie, first, can you let us know how many people have signed up? And then we will ask you to call on the first person who'd like to make a public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe we have a total of 35 speakers for general public comment.
Okay, so if we did 3 minutes a person, it would be an hour and a half, far exceeding the... So I think we should... What do you suggest, Grace?
Do you want to go to 2 minutes and we can just limit the first public comment for 30 minutes and then have the rest at the second public comment period and give them 2 minutes as well?
We don't have a super long agenda, so maybe we go ahead and take public comment for 2 minutes per person for 45 minutes.
Okay.
And then if those of you feel that you don't need the full amount of time, you're willing to adjust, then we might even be able to get through everybody, but we'll see. Okay, so 2 minutes each, and then we'll go for 45 minutes, but we can actually reassess at 30 minutes even if we want to go to a minute.
That sounds
great. Okay, all right, great. All right, go ahead, Katie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For our first public commenter, we have Garrett Kitahata, followed by Ryan Davis.
Please come to the podium.
Hi, commissioners. Is the mic working? Press
the button. There you go. Hi, commissioners. I hope you're doing well today. My name is Garrett Kitahata, and I'm coming here on behalf of myself as an individual and also supporting Ryan Davis and Isaac for Project First Light. The issue I'd like to bring to the table is the offshore oil rigs. There's four in Santa Barbara County that have been brought up to be recommissioned, and I'm here to talk against the recommissioning of these offshore oil rigs because we have already passed the era of oil and the oil-dominant era, and we are ushering in a new era of renewable energy, which is more sustainable and cost-effective. There was recently where I overheard there was a meeting about offshore wind last week in this region, and there's just a lot of new technologies and new development happening, especially in the state of California, and California can be a leader. There's something called the California Effect that is enacting, and that is that we actually are policy leaders in the country, and we can actually enact on these issues by keeping these offshore oil rigs decommissioned and relics of the past. And I think that that would be an important issue to bring to the table, and I appreciate you all for any comments that you can make on this matter. Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you very much. Katie, can we please have the next speaker?
Yes, thank you. Our next speaker is Ryan Davis, followed by Neil Desai.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ryan Davis, and I'm a former active duty service member, resident of Santa Barbara, undergraduate geography researcher at UC Berkeley, as well as the founder and creative director of America's Green Corps Lab Group at Cal. We are the authors, architects, and developers of a technological peace and conflict resolution strategy that aims to improve public safety through better early warning and mitigate global warming losses and impacts through the transformation of Earth and space infrastructure. An important component of our R&D work is the repurposing of select non-operational oil infrastructure for energy storage, generation, and transmission. For our UC Lab Group's pilot project, we have modeled the evolution of Platform Holly, a decommissioned oil platform located about 5 miles off UCSB's campus, into a green lighthouse ocean energy and aquaculture research site. Platform Holly is one of the only assets managed directly by the California State Lands Commission after its previous owner, Venico, went bankrupt. As the final decision is being determined regarding Platform Holly's final disposition, options ranging from total removal to partial removal to leaving in place are being discussed. We have assessed our course of action that is best for the environment and allows the several metric tons of marine biology and 30 species of fish and reef to continue to grow into a sea tree. Additionally, our strategic work will save the state money and create new funding opportunities related to the advancement of AI infrastructure. While decommissioning of the Gaviota Coast non-operational oil infrastructure, like Holly, has been preceding Sable's efforts to reactivate the Santa Ynez unit, has highlighted the dilapidated state of the infrastructure network and the serious concerns of the community regarding oil and gas operations in the Santa Barbara coastal area, where restoration work is underway. Our Green Lighthouse project reveals a new course for Gaviota Coast non-operational oil infrastructure. With recent fire activity and environmental hazards related to planetary temp increase and lightning activity, the need to make public safety upgrades is critical to assisting better early warning for California's community. The Commission has already aligned with our first step to install solar-powered navigational aids. Now, as part of the Green Lighthouse's next step, we recommend that the State Lands Commission continues to monitor the seeps around Holly and install an HD marine fire weather watch camera system and weather node that can be integrated into UCSD's Alert AI fire detection system and support California's early warning networks. I think I'm out of time, but I have more to say, and if anybody is interested, we're available after the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Neil Desai, followed by Molly McCoy.
Hello, Neil.
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis, Commissioners. I'm Neil Desai with the National Parks Conservation Association. I first want to thank the three of you, the staff, the institution that exists here. We're witnessing the dismantling at the federal level. Very grateful for you all here. I'm here to talk about Cadiz, and let me just state my request up front. We requested 2 months ago, and I'm here to respectfully request again that the Commission issue a letter to Cadiz outlining its responsibilities under the law that it has to undergo Water Code 1815 review. We notice and appreciate the Commission's work to ensure transparency and the protection of public trust with the Sable issue. I think if you've seen here, we have a counterparty with Cadiz that represents the same types of issues. For example, in a slide deck presented to investors last month, the company is portraying itself as shovel-ready, that this $200 million construction project to convert the El Paso natural gas pipeline that you acted on will begin in Q3, which is in a month. It states water will start flowing in 2026. Nowhere does it say that Cadiz must undergo the State Lands Commission review. It hasn't even submitted an application. So the public and communities deserve to know the regulatory structure, not be misled because the company is hiding the ball. The company must follow the law. It's essential that a written track record be laid. It's important, especially during these times. And your work on Sable, I believe, is akin to this. So we respectfully request that you submit a letter to Cadiz this month. Thank you again for your consideration. Thank you again to the staff and the team here.
Thank you, Neil.
Our next speaker is Molly McCoy, followed by Eric Bershinger.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Molly McCoy. I'm a resident from Ventura County, and I'm graduating from UC Davis in a week with my Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Policy and Planning. I'm speaking in solidarity with everyone in Oxnard and the surrounding communities negatively impacted by the Ormond Beach Power Plant who couldn't be with us today, and I am a proud youth representative of the nonprofit Climate First Replacing Oil and Gas. Funny enough, I'm actually missing the last half of an environmental justice lecture right now to be here today to amplify the community calls for the lease to be rejected and for this power plant to be shut down. The lease proposal is a textbook example of environmental, distributive, and procedural injustice from the way this item has been rescheduled and outright pulled from the agenda haphazardly with little community notice. Oxnard residents have been the dumping grounds for far too long. They're surrounded by so many other polluting and destructive sites and have brought up their concerns over 8 months ago and have heard nothing in return. I understand that California's power and electrical grid is a tricky subject, especially right as we're entering what will likely be yet another record-breaking summer, and it's absolutely critical to keep the lights and AC on for all Californians. But there's no need to sacrifice frontline communities like Oxnard and neglect California's environmental justice statutes. In the 2022 heat wave, the Ormond gas plant emissions jumped by 60%, and the resulting sulfurous and nitrous oxide fumes cost the state from $12.3 to $27.8 million in negative health impacts. The science is clear. Extending this lease will only prolong the lifespan of California's fossil fuel infrastructure and environmental racist legacy. It's time to shut down Ormond Beach Power Plant for good. I'm calling on the commission to please listen to Oxnard and Ventura County residents and reject lease 4196. And when you do, please make the final decision in Oxnard without any last-minute changes or shadow dockets. The community deserves full accountability and transparency from you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is Eric Bershinger, followed by Joan Tharp.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Eric Bershinger, and I'm speaking to you today as a lifelong resident of Ventura County, a recent environmental studies graduate from UC Santa Barbara, and as a member of Climate First Replacing Oil and Gas. I'm here today to comment on an item that was pulled from the agenda last minute, the Ormond Beach Generating Station. It's now been almost 7 years since the plant was supposed to be decommissioned, yet the community of Oxnard has been put on the back burner time and time again on this issue. This item has been rescheduled 3 times while residents anxiously await answers. I believe more transparency is needed on this issue, and the community should be given more time to react to the commission's abrupt changes. Look, I get the need for emergency plants, but that need shouldn't require sacrificing a community's health. It also shouldn't waste taxpayer money. Instead of spending millions on sustaining an outdated gas turbine from 1968, money should be invested in more modernized infrastructure like battery storage. Besides, when the plant was turned on last year during the heat wave, it still didn't meet demand at full capacity, while spewing toxic fumes across the region. Lastly, Oxnard is a community of working-class families who can't make meetings like this one at noon on a Tuesday held over 300 miles away. The next meeting on this issue should be in Oxnard, outside of working hours, so that the community's true voice can be heard. Oxnard is tired of being a sacrifice zone. The commission should uphold their commitment to environmental justice, as well as California's climate goals, and reject this lease once and for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the topic of Ormond, we're now moving to people joining via Zoom. Joan Tharp is next. If we haven't identified her, then we can go to Paul Burke.
Joan, are you there? Do you see a hand?
Chair, if Joan is on, she may be on under another name, and we can't tell. So there are hands raised, but there is no Joan Tharp on the list. So.
Okay. We'll see if, Joan, if you can hear us and you're still there, we will go back to you. So
yeah,
let's make a note of that.
Yeah, we can have our team try and
contact. Okay. All right, Katie, next speaker.
Next speaker is Paul Burke, followed by Aaron Holt.
Paul, are you there? Do you see any?
I'm limited in the screens that I can see, so I'm relying on our back channel right now. Let me check in with them.
Paul, if you're there, please let us know.
Okay, we'll go to Aurora.
Aurora, are you there? Ah, hello, Aurora. Please proceed.
Mm-hmm.
Please
Thank
proceed.
You.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Aurora, here with the Central Coast Alliance United for Sustainable Economy. I'm here to ask you to reject the lease to ensure that this power plant does not receive yet a third extension. We know your jurisdiction is limited to the conduits, but we cannot be oblivious to the fact that this decision has weight to it. This decision is a part of the greater process, and if the commission votes no, It sends a message to the other entities and other agencies that have a decision on this. Decommissioning and dismantling is a long process. This is an opportunity that will help in the long run mitigate impacts of climate change by securing the shutdown and dismantling of OBGS. Money is currently going into projects like the Ormond Beach Access and Restoration Plan, and it only makes sense to be a part of this vision of the community and ensure that this process begins now and that we're early and on time. We know that this plant does not turn on just only 3 to 4 times a year, which is why there is decreased air pollution. So I ask today that if the concern is around energy reliability, then why are we delaying this process? Why have we directed our resources to find real solutions to upgrade our transmission systems? The energy reliability question should not come at the cost of Oxnard residents' ability to access their own backyard beach. This is a prime example of environmental racism. Like acknowledged today by previous speakers, we see what is happening at the federal level. We see racist policies, drill baby drill, the big beautiful bill that are foundationally racist and put Black, brown, indigenous, immigrant, and low-income community at the forefront of pollution due to extraction. When this is happening at the federal level, we look to our state leaders, like the commission, to be bold leaders to make the process move forward and to fight for people and to uphold California's bold values and goals to justice and the transition to clean energy. We call for more transparency from the commission. Come to Oxnard to make your final decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next public commenter is Mary Fitzpatrick. And a note, we have many people with their hands raised who have not filled out a comment form. If you could do that, that would be great so that we can identify you. Thank you.
Let me just repeat that. So if you are waiting to make a comment, you also need to fill out a form before we can call on you. And Katie, how do they find that form?
The form is available through our agenda and on our website.
Can you put it in the chat?
Let me see if I can do that. We will try to put a note on
that. Okay. Otherwise, for now, on the agenda and in the website. Okay. Mary, if you're there, please proceed with your comment.
Thank you very much. I oppose the California State Lands Commission extending the lease term and increasing the surety bond for seawater intake and discharge conduits at the 44-year-old Ormond Beach Generating Station. The Governor's Office of Emergency Services argues that Ormond Beach Generating Station is needed to meet peak demand, and it argues that at-risk individuals who rely on respirators, etc., are vulnerable in the case of extreme heat. The irony of this example is that peak power plants produce large amounts of NOx and CO2 emissions during ramp-up and runtime, pollutants that at-risk individuals with lung and heart ailments, like myself, are particularly sensitive to. But actually, it's not just the at-risk population, but residents of all ages and health conditions who are negatively impacted by OBGS and other industrial polluters in the Oxnard area. Nitrogen oxides and volatile organic compounds from power plants, when exposed to sunlight, contribute to the formation of smog, especially in the summer. Smog damages lung tissue and reduces lung function in everyone. We should not limit our consideration of the impacts of OBGS on its human neighbors. The Ormond Beach coastal area, like all coastal zones, provides critical living spaces for numerous mammals, birds, amphibians, and aquatic species, including some endangered species like the California least tern, the snowy plover, and the tidewater goby. Once through cooling, cools the turbine system in the power plant, but warms ocean water, making it inhospitable for kelp forests and the fish, mollusks, crustaceans, sea otters, and other life they provide homes for. A living ecosystem has no price tag. Ormond Beach and Marsh are part of a precious coastal region, which never should have been allowed to be so damaged by industrial development by ill-advised governing and regulatory decision makers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mary. Next speaker, Katie.
Our next speaker is Fatima Agradaro, followed by Odette Moran.
Fatima, if you are there, please proceed with your comment.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. Oh, yeah. My name is Fatima, and I live 10 minutes away from Ormond Beach Power Plant in Oxnard. I'm here today because I'm frustrated and heartbroken. This is now our third time the final decision for the future of the power plant has been delayed. Why? It's hard not to feel like our community is being ignored, like our voices don't matter, even though we're told our input is valued. This community, the California State Science Commission, has publicly committed to environmental justice, to a future where communities like Oxnard are no longer disproportionately impacted by pollution and where everyone can access and enjoy beach, public, coastal spaces. But here we are, 8 months after raising urgent concerns about our lease extensions and decommissioning, and we still have no answers. This is personal for me. My whole family suffers from allergies made worse by the smoke from the power plant. My little brother has asthma. He can't breathe at night, and I'm scared for him. And I have a baby sister who's still growing and developing. She can't sleep at night. I can't sleep at night, knowing something so toxic is this close to her and my family. Why should our families be the ones to pay the price for energy reliability? Oxnard has three gas plants along its coastline. You don't see that in wealthy coastline areas. We are being treated as a sacrifice zone. That is environmental injustice, plain and simple. We need real innovative solutions to California's energy needs that don't continue to harm communities like mine. Today, the commission has a chance to take a stand and the lease in the chapter of pollution to reject Lease 196 for ocean water conduits to ensure Ormond Beach Power Plant does not receive attention from other agencies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fatima. Katie, next speaker.
Our next speaker is Odette Moran, followed by Julia Duell.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Odette Moran. My pronouns are they and theirs, and I'm a youth and young adult community organizer with CAUSE and have here lived in the area for more than 20 years. Thank you, commissioners, for taking careful time and consideration to make the best decision for our community. And when it comes to Lease 4196, the ocean water conduits for OPGS, and I am here once more to ask you to reject Lease 4196. As mentioned in previous comments of here today, our immigrant working class community in Oxnard is tired, and we want to see the Ormond Beach Generating Station shut down and cleaned up now. As mentioned, a wall of industry, it sits like a scar on our coast, violating life, land, and dictating how we live our lives. Our community has lived with the scar of industry so long that we really don't trust industries to leave. And now with all of the federal policies breathing down our neck, it scares me of this further harm. Well, the promises of restoration and access, they have been spoken for years, but instead of seeing those promises come to fruition and our vision enacted, instead we have been met consistently and constantly with extensions, expansions, and broken promises by industries. This is why our young community has been engaging with you, the California State Lands Commission, because we want to count on you to stand with us. Help our aged community make sure all of our agencies are aligned for the retirement and thoughtful cleanup for this power plant now. I also wanted to highlight that although we appreciate the careful time, and this is also really prolonging the process and making it difficult to engage, young students have called on you, Lieutenant Governor Kunalakis, to reject the lease and could not make it today because they're currently graduating from high school. They've shifted their schedules from April 2nd, April 14th, June 20th, June 3rd, and are now waiting for this final decision date. Due to shifting meetings, we want to call for transparency. Solidify a time and decision and come to us, releasing all of the studies. Thank you for your time and reject Lease 4196.
Thank you very much. Katie, next speaker.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Julia Dwell, followed by Hina Singh.
Julia, please proceed with your comment.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Julia Dowell, and I'm a senior campaign organizer with Sierra Club. I'm speaking today on behalf of Sierra Club and the Regenerate California Coalition. And most importantly, I'm here today in solidarity with CAUSE and the Oxnard community. I'm here to ask you to reject Lease 4196 for ocean water conduits to ensure that the Ormond Beach Generating Station does not receive a third extension from other agencies. And I'm also here to ask for you to make the final decision in Oxnard. We're really here today to ask for more accountability and transparency from the commission. We've been through a number of last minute changes, as have been shared, and we really would like to have asked for a lot more accountability and transparency in this decision-making process. The current federal administration is really changing the narrative and the landscape around fossil fuel infrastructure. And as you all know, has been very vocal around, you know, pushing drill, baby, drill. And we're really looking to you, the State Lands Commission and our state leaders, to stand up against this harmful narrative and policy. And I also just want to highlight that this final decision has been rescheduled 3 times. The item has been pulled twice from the agenda. And these abrupt changes really impact our communities that spend a lot of time and energy preparing for meetings like this, taking time off work and school to try to be here and make their voices heard. You know, as others have emphasized, it's been 8 months since Oxnard residents have raised concerns about what would happen in either scenario and if the lease was extended or amended and what the State Lands Commission's responsibility during decommissioning and dismantling could be. And we've not had adequate answers to these questions. So I just want to again ask you and urge you to reject Lease 4196. And please make the final decision in Oxnard and be more transparent in this decision-making process. Thank you.
Katie, next speaker, please.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Hina Singh, followed by Elma De Gea.
And if everyone could please be reminded to stick within the 2-minute time limit. Thank you.
Sounds good. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Hina Singh, and I'm a resident of Culver City and here today on behalf of the California Environmental Justice Alliance and the Regenerate California campaign, standing in solidarity with the CAUSE community. Today, I'm urging you to reject the lease 4196 for seawater intake and discharge conduits for the Ormond Beach Generating Station and to hold the decision-making meeting in Oxnard. The Oxnard community, especially youth, have been showing up to these meetings for the last 8 months, and as was mentioned, even during their graduation season this week, to urge you to reject the lease extension. California energy reliability should not come at the expense of Oxnard residents' health, safety, and quality of life. This is a clear environmental justice issue. You have the opportunity at the commission to be a champion for this community and for all EJ communities across the state by rejecting this lease. I just want to take this time to also uplift our request for one-on-one meetings with each of the commissioners to engage in meaningful dialogue, ask questions, hear your perspectives, and share our concerns. We'd appreciate this time with you. And additionally, we have extended an invitation to our Energy Justice Tour in Oxnard later this month, where we'll be visiting different gas plants, and battery energy storage sites, and you'll have the opportunity to engage with the community directly about how Ormond Beach Generating Station has impacted their families and communities. Currently, none of the commissioners will be attending the tour. We'd like to request, in particular, Chair Kunalakis, please reconsider our invitation to hear directly from the community members and engage in dialogue around the impacts of Ormond Beach Generating Station and other gas plants in the community. We'd appreciate the opportunity to host you and your staff on the tour so that you can make an informed decision, which we hope you will see is to reject the lease extension and protect Oxnard. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, Katie.
Our next speaker is Elma De La Gilia, followed by Melissa Munoz.
Alma, if you're there, please proceed with your comment.
Hello, commissioners.
Hello.
My name is Benagila. Welcome. I'm 26 years old. I recently became a homeowner in Port Hueneme, but I am a proud lifelong resident of South Oxnard, born and raised. I'm here speaking out again, asking that you reject lease 4196 that would continue extending and enabling the environmental harm my community has faced for decades at the hands of our state agency's negligence in allowing my community to continue to be a sacrifice zone. It is this commission's responsibility to ensure that Ormond Beach Power Plant retires now following the state's energy plans, and that this commission follows through with its supposed vision of a future in which environmental justice communities are no longer disproportionately impacted by pollution, and where all Californians, including South Oxnard residents, can access and enjoy beautiful public lands. Time and time again, my community's been ignored. We've been told that our safety and health is just not a priority for the state. In previous state land commission meetings regarding this topic, there has been a failure in accessibility, accountability, and transparency by this commission on a decision that will impact my community for the foreseeable future. My community's health has been sacrificed for decades due to the state's emergency needs, and this agency actively choosing to enable the continued use of obsolete technology. The Ormond Beach Power Plant has continued operating despite its failure to meet emergency energy demands, wasting millions in ratepayer dollars. The process of engaging community has felt performative from this commission, with a lack of language access, hybrid meeting access, and consideration for community engagement from working class families, to the point where youth have had to skip school to attend meetings, or people have had to skip work. At the end of the day, this commission hands are not tied. You have the power to lead the decommission process, starting with rejecting the renewal of an extended lease for a dirty, inefficient, obsolete technology. Have your final meeting in Oxnard. Please speak with community and allow us to participate. Thank you.
Katie, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Savannah Tanner. And I believe Melissa Munoz has dropped off. If you rejoin, please raise your hand so we can identify you.
Savannah, if you're there, please proceed with your comment.
Hi, good afternoon, Lieutenant Governor Kunalakis and California State Lands Commissioners. I'm Savannah with Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy in Oxnard, and I also live 10 minutes away from Ormond Beach. I ask you to consider your proximity to an industrialized community. I'm here to help immerse you into our community's atmosphere. When was the last time you stepped outside in an industrialized city park? Have you ever stepped in a park trying to enjoy your day, but you can't breathe a single breath of fresh air? Do you have kids who can't play in the park without breaking into coughing fits, and that the coughing doesn't stop, even when they get inside, and they can't fall asleep because they keep coughing, and that they have to miss school because they are getting sick, and none of the kids who live even 10 miles away are getting sick like your kids are? My neighbors, who I babysit for, go through that. We understand that the Ormond Beach Generating Station is being used less. However, amending the lease would allow for no small continuation of contaminating every part of our lives. Amending the lease, no matter how small it is still an infraction of justice, continues to contribute to our declining health. So I ask you to reject Lease Amendment 4196. You should not trust industries to comply. They constantly violate the law, and I am here to ask you to stand up to them alongside our community. Imagine that you have a house with water containing trace mercury and lead, and you're scared to drink water filtered from your fridge. Imagine that you're afraid to take a shower every day, that you didn't feel safe to brush your teeth or leave your windows open. Imagine that you weren't safe in your own home from being poisoned. Imagine learning that what gave your mother cancer, your grandfather Alzheimer's, your kids learning disabilities, and you a malfunctioning thyroid could be traced back to the PM10, the ammonia, formaldehyde, arsenic, mercury, and lead spewed by a handful of industrial plants. That is me, my family, my classmates, my coworkers, and all their families' lives. I ask you again, reject lease extension 4196 immediately. The way it is poisoning us and our home is illegal, and we've refused to repent, pretend that paying a few measly grand in permit violation payments can restore the lives that these conduits destroy with these poisonous gases. And we promise to only vote for people who are disillusioned by the lies that this industry promises and choose not to compromise.
If you could wrap up. We're trying to keep to
protect this land. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So are we half hour in or maybe one more at 2 minutes? And then how many more people do we have signed up?
I believe we have about 15 people signed up. We have about two more topic batches after this.
Two more topic batches?
Yeah, within the general. So we've grouped them so that people speak on the topic.
15 more on Ormond B?
So two more for Ormond, and then we're moving to the next
topic. On Ormond, let's take the next just a minute each. We could have done this maybe for the topics, by topic. Let's give the next two speakers 1 minute, and then let's start again at 2 minutes with the next topic. Let's see how we go.
For our next speaker, we have Melissa Munoz, followed by Brooke Balthazar.
I'm going to ask everyone to please keep your comments. We have far more speakers than we have time for, but we definitely want to hear for at least a minute from everyone who signed up. So if you could stay within that time, the next two speakers on the same topic for 1 minute each, please. Who is the next speaker?
Hello.
Can you try speaking?
Hi, commissioners and staff. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Brooke.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, wait, sorry. This is Melissa.
Oh.
I was asked to unmute, but I can unmute.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Melissa.
Okay. Hello, commissioners and staff. My name is Melissa Munoz. I'm with a local grassroots organization, Climate First Replacing Oil and Gas, and a lifelong community member of Oxnard. I'm commenting today regarding the Ormond Beach Generating Station, which was abruptly removed from the agenda. Here in Oxnard, we've mobilized and organized for several of these hearings, and respectfully, we don't understand why this matter continues to be put off. We do not appreciate all of these changes on this matter when it directly impacts and affects our community members and organizers. Our ask remains the same. We urge the commission to reject lease 4196 for the renewal of ocean water conduits, ensuring that the Ormond Beach Power Plant does not get a third extension on their lease. We also ask that their final decision be made in the city where this power plant sits and continues affecting families in Oxnard. We ask for more accountability and transparency from the commission, as well as we all deserve our voices and please to be heard. We want the commitment of transparency. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please, Katie.
Yes, our next speaker is Brooke Balthazar.
Brooke, please proceed with your comments.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commission staff. My name is Brooke, and I'm the community organizing manager at a nonprofit called CFROG, or Climate First Replacing Oil and Gas. I'm also a South Oxnard resident who is deeply concerned with the proposed lease amendment for the Ormond Beach Generating Station, and also deeply frustrated with how the commission has gone about this decision-making process. The commission's actions on this issue over the last 8 months, or rather lack thereof, are telling, and a failure in upholding the commission's environmental justice commitments. This final decision has been rescheduled 3 times, and these abrupt changes to the agenda have impacted our community's capacity to engage with this issue. We have asked for transparency and accountability and an early notification, but it seems that the message is not getting through, and we deserve better. We're tired of taking work in school off to be here time and time again, only to have our voices so clearly not heard. Please reject this lease and hold the decision-making meeting in Oxnard. It is time to show up for people and not profit. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Why don't we begin with the next group and the next topic, and we'll start. How many speakers do we have on the next topic?
The next topic is Sable, and we have 7 people signed up so far.
Okay. Why don't we start with 2 minutes each?
Okay. And I will transition to Jeff to call on the speakers.
It's gonna,
for Sable.
I didn't realize that it wasn't mixed in by right, so I think we should go ahead and let people speak for 2 minutes, and then it's just we may be going over a little bit on public comment, but I think it's okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So our first speaker is Jenna McGovern, followed by Izzy Sistek.
Jenna, if you can hear us, please proceed with your comments.
Thank you. Hello, commissioners. My name is Jenna McGovern, and I'm with the UCSB Environmental Affairs Board and Stop Sable Coalition. I first want to thank Lieutenant Governor Kunalakis for your powerful May 23rd letter to Sable Offshore. The deceptive and noncompliant behavior you called out in the letter is representative of Sable's entire history as it has attempted to take over the corroded Santa Ynez Unit pipeline. Sable has repeatedly ignored regulations, notably from the California Coastal Commission and Santa Barbara County. Beyond just the environmental implications, which are plentiful and damning, Sable is a representation of the exact type of company we cannot let in as an operator in our county. I urge the commission to not approve a lease holdover to Sable Offshore, and I want the commission to write a letter to the Office of the State Fire Marshal to uphold the commitment to ensuring that Sable comes into regulatory compliance and resolves its issues with all agencies before you issue an approval for restart. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Izzy Sistek, followed by Donna Will.
Izzy, if you're there, please proceed.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, my name is Izzy Sistek, and I'm representing UCSB's Environmental Affairs Board. First, I'd like to thank the chair for the May 23rd letter to Sable Offshore. It was important to publicly call out Sable's misleading press release and to clarify that what they're calling a restart is actually just limited well testing, not a full return to oil production. That kind of language misleads the public and creates unnecessary confusion. It's also troubling that Sable failed to inform the commission before running oil, however limited, through the offshore pipeline. That shows a clear lack of transparency and disregard for the expectations set out by the commission and other regulatory agencies. As Sable is already misrepresenting its activities and failing to follow communication protocols, I urge you not to approve any lease holdover. That would reward behavior that breaks public trust and potentially violates lease terms. I also strongly encourage the commission to follow up with the state fire marshal. Please ask them to hold firm on not approving any restart until Sable has resolved all regulatory issues and legal challenges. Thank you for your time and for protecting our coasts and communities.
Thank you very much, Izzy. Jeff, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Donna Will, followed by Nikki Taleb.
Donna, please proceed with your comments.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Donna Will, representing Get Oil Out, an organization formed in response to the catastrophic 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill. We wish to thank the chair for sending the May 23rd letter to Sable, pointing out misrepresentation of its well testing and failure to inform the commissions of plans to run oil through the offshore pipeline. We urge the commission not to approve a lease holdover if Sable has committed a breach. Also, we ask the commission to write to the Office of the State Fire Marshal and reiterate the request for them to uphold their commitment to ensuring that Sable comes into regulatory compliance and resolves its issues with all agencies before approving the pipeline restart. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jeff, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Nikki Taleb, followed by Bill Woodbridge.
Nikki, please proceed with your comments. Nikki, if you can hear us, please proceed.
It looks like both Nikki Taleb and Bill Woodbridge are not on Zoom, so we're going to skip them and can circle back if they arrive on Zoom.
Okay.
So our next commenter will be Jeremy Frankel, followed by Molly Troop.
Jeremy, please proceed with your comments.
All right, can you hear me?
We certainly can.
Okay, my name is Jeremy. I'm an attorney with the Environmental Defense Center. So we, too, just wanted to thank you and the commission for your vigilance and proactive response to Sable's May 19th announcement. As you know, Sable's lack of transparency with the commission was not an isolated incident. It's only the latest transgression in a long pattern of unscrupulous behavior. For months, Sable has willfully violated a host of state laws and agency directives as it rushes to bring offshore drilling back to the Gaviota Coast. Such behavior seriously calls into question Sable's ability to be a responsible lessee and to operate in such a highly regulated environment. As the commission's letter suggests, Sable's behavior bears directly on whether the commission ought to approve its pending lease assignment requests and whether it should consider extending these leases in the future. And, you know, frankly, Sable's behavior is disqualifying for any entity, yet alone a speculative company that is attempting to operate some of the riskiest and most highly regulated facilities in the state. So the stakes here really couldn't be higher. We hope that the commission will continue meeting Sable's violations with the severity that they demand, including by terminating the leases at issue for any material breaches thereof. And just really quickly, we also wanted to update you that this morning, in our lawsuit against the fire marshal, we did ask for the court to issue a temporary restraining order and a preliminary injunction enjoining the restart of the Lost Forest pipeline system. The court did grant our request for a TRO, which is in place until a July 18th hearing on our preliminary injunction request. So thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the update. Jeff, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Molly Troop, followed by Jennifer Savage.
Molly, please proceed with your comments.
Good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis and members of the Commission. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. My name is Molly Troop, and I'm the Science and Program Manager at Santa Barbara Channel Keeper, an environmental nonprofit organization in Santa Barbara. Our mission is to protect and restore the Santa Barbara Channel and its watersheds. And we work to ensure clean water, healthy habitats, abundant wildlife, and thriving communities. Channel Keeper has been working tirelessly with our partners to oppose the activities being conducted by Sable Offshore in violation of our important state environmental laws. We have been deeply concerned about the company's brazen actions as they've continued to ignore multiple state agency notices of violations, cease and desist orders, in their efforts to resume the use of the same corroded pipeline that caused the 2015 Plains All-American spill. I wanted to thank you, the chair, for your letter sent to Sable last week acknowledging Sable's misrepresentation regarding the well testing and the failure to inform the commission of its plans to run oil through its offshore pipeline. I also have the same ask that you've heard from other speakers with regards to not approving lease holdovers if Sable commits a breach, and also requesting that the commission write to the Office of the State Fire Marshal and reiterate the request for them to uphold their commitment in ensuring that Sable comes into regulatory compliance and resolving its issues with agencies before issuing approval for restart. Thank you for your work to protect our public trust resources and the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you very much, Molly. Next speaker, please, Jeff.
Our next speaker is Jennifer Savage.
Jennifer, please proceed with your comments.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis, Commissioners, Jennifer Savage, California Policy Associate Director, Surfrider Foundation. Surfrider has long been opposed to offshore oil drilling due to the fact that time and time again, when it comes to ocean wildlife, public coastal recreation, and coast and ocean-based economies, drilling is inevitably killing. Forgive my forthcoming repetition. I will keep this very short. On behalf of Surfrider's 16 California chapters and 89 California student clubs representing more than 22,000 supporters, first, thank you, Chair Kunalakis, for the letter that you sent on May 23rd to Sable, calling out Sable Offshore's misrepresentations and failures. As you're all aware, Sable Offshore also has the dubious distinction of being the only alleged violator to ever wholly disregard a cease and desist order from the California Coastal Commission. We join others in asking that the State Lands Commission, one, urge the Office of the State Fire Marshal to ensure that Sable comes into regulatory compliance, and two, require that Sable resolve its issues with all state agencies before they issue an approval for restart. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Jeff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we'd be moving on to our next topic, for mm-hmm. which we have 10 speakers, and just wanted to check with you how you'd like to proceed.
I think we're moving through pretty quickly, so I think we ask the 10 speakers, if possible, stick under a minute, but if you need to go over, we'll have the outside limit at 2 minutes. Otherwise, it's not fair considering we took so many from the first topic. So why don't we proceed with that and move forward, Jeff.
Perfect. Thank you, Madam Chair. In that case, our next speaker is Captain Patricia Cummins, followed by Bud Cummins.
Very good. Patricia, Captain, please proceed.
Hi, do you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, I have a slide to show. Thank you. I see it's up.
Oh, thank you.
I'm Pat, a longtime mooring committee and live aboard in Newport Harbor. I just wanted to highlight how well the current mooring permit system works for the public here in Newport. If you look at the slide, you see two very different ways boats are stored. On the left is a typical dock. You can walk right up to the boat. There's power, water, electric heat, often dedicated parking, and other nice amenities. And if you look at the right side, there's a mooring out in the middle of the bay. There's no parking, no water, no electricity. We get to our boats by rowing or paddling out in our dinghy or kayak. The local coastal program actually recognizes the reduced value of this. It says the city should continue to provide shore moorings and offshore moorings as an important source of low-cost public access to the water at the harbor. Under the current permit system, we own and pay to maintain the mooring gear ourselves, the ball, the chain, the anchor that hold the boat in place. We cover those costs out of pocket. This keeps the system affordable. It's what provides stable coastal access for regular working people, lifeguards, teachers, mechanics, firefighters, licensed captains, retirees, folks who love the ocean but are on a budget. Our moorings just don't benefit us. They provide coastal access to other boaters also. When we're away on a trip or our boat is in the yard for repairs, the city sublets program lets visiting boats use our moorings. And while we maintain the mooring gear ourselves, the sublet revenue goes straight to the City Thailand's fund. This could be a great way for less affluent people, boaters, to get access to Newport Harbor. But the sublet fees have gotten so high that many travelers boating are just skipping Newport Harbor. You could see the great way for less affluent boaters to get access to the harbor. Now the city wants to take away our permits and turn them into expensive city-owned licenses. We're asking you to keep the value in keeping the current mooring permit system in place. It works. It supports working boaters, and it helps keep the harbor accessible to more people. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Bud Koomans, followed by Peter Kaz.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Good afternoon. I'm Bud, a longtime mooring permittee and retiree in Newport Harbor. I want to point out that the mooring holders have been paying more than our fair share for over a decade, while enduring more restrictive rules and regulations than just about any other group in the harbor. And instead of being treated fairly, we're the ones facing elimination. Many of us just won't be able to afford to reduce the up the rates. Even though the mooring permit system is called low cost, it actually brings in a lot more money to the city's Tidelands Fund, more than any other permit type in the harbor. City's own financial report for 2023-24, about 1,200 mooring permits brought in $1.9 million through offshore and onshore fees, sublets, and transfer fees. By comparison, the roughly 1,200 residential pier permits only brought in about $280,000 during that same period. That's a huge difference for the same use of the tidelands. We hope you'll agree that the city should fix this fee imbalance before making any drastic changes to our rates to a system that already is working. Please don't let the city take our permits while giving better deals to others. It really feels like the working class boaters are being shown the door in order to make room for wealthier interests. We're asking you to help us keep the current mooring permit system in place. It's fair, it works, and it supports the public access for people who aren't millionaires. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jeff, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Peter Kaz, followed by Barbara Griffith.
Good afternoon. My name is Peter, and I'm a mooring permit holder in Newport Beach Harbor. I'm here today because I'm seriously concerned that the city of Newport Beach is not living up to its responsibilities as a trustee of public tidelands. These lands are supposed to be managed for the benefit of all Californians, not just the nearby homeowners and business interests. The city is not trying to replace our long-standing mooring permit with short-term city-owned license that costs a lot more. This major change was rolled out with almost no notice, just one business day over holiday weekend. And there were no public hearing or real opportunities for input. This is not how public trust lands are supposed to be managed. It was not open, it was not fair, and it did not follow basic principle of due process. We are asking this commission, please, to step in and require the city to pause any change to the mooring system until they have addressed the current inequities. And going forward, make sure any changes happen through the truly transparent process that includes input from the people who are most affected, those of us who usually actually use and care and pay to maintain our mooring. We've been under systematic attack and discrimination by the city. We are the most vulnerable people in the community right now, and the city is taking care of the rich people and the wealthy people, not really concerned about us. Thank you so much. Please help us. Thank you.
Jack, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Barbara Griffith, followed by Mike Fleming.
Barbara, please proceed with your comment.
Thank you. Hi.
Go ahead and proceed. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Barbara, and I'm here to speak about the ongoing pattern of discrimination against the mooring users in Newport Beach. As you can see this chart, in 2022, the city of Newport Beach tried to raise the mooring cost by 1,000%. Now, mind you, the city of Newport Beach is trying to remove the average boater, which is people who put their boats on moorings. In 2022, the city worked with NMA, Newport Mooring Association, and sort of worked it out. In 2024, they came and they are proposing to increase the mooring fee by 500%. There's been a lot of controversy over this. We've had to raise money to hire attorneys. We are asking that state lands steps in, because there are certain segment of our ocean or our harbor which is being discriminated. As many have said before me, if you're not really a millionaire, you're probably not going to be able to have a boat in the harbor. In 2025, they tried to do a reconfiguration, which was voted down by 9-1. And then now the ongoing city has increased civilians targeting and enforcing mooring holders, meaning that they drive their boats around and they put tickets on mooring holders. So they are definitely discriminating and targeting against mooring permit holders. We're asking you to help us keep our permit active the way it is.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Jeff, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Mike Fleming, followed by Ann Stenton.
And how many more speakers do we have?
Including those, we have six.
Okay. After the next two speakers, we'll give everyone 1 minute. And it's all on the same topic? Okay.
Hi.
Mike?
Am I live?
You are live. Yes, please proceed.
I'm Mike Fleming. I'm a U.S. Coast Guard licensed captain, and I've been boating in Newport Harbor all my life. First as a family boater on the trailer boat, now I live on a moored boat. The city has made very clear the distinction between an upland pier holder and someone who's out on a mooring. I don't want to reiterate what everybody has already mentioned, but one thing I didn't hear mentioned is for a while as a captain, I have used boats that are moored on residential piers where we're paying $3,000 or $4,000 a month to moor our boat on a pier that is basically $30 a month to the city. And there's, if you do the math, upwards of $10,000 a month going in. And I just don't understand how that much money can be going right through the hands of the city. Well, the city doesn't even touch it. It just goes to the homeowner. And they're the least likely to need the money. But yet, it goes on. And there's many situations where you can see around the harbor where there's 6-7 boats tied up on a single pier that's only costing maybe $30 a month. And at the same time, it's costing $150 for a boat out on a mooring. And that's soon to go up to $500 or $600. It's brazen, you know, misappropriation of the trust. And I just ask that you guys would really look in to see. I don't think it's legal for that kind of allowing the state lands to be profitable like a commercial marina to a private private resident. So please look into all this mismanagement. And they're always looking at us like we're making money on our moorings and we're barely able to use them. So I'd love you to see the details. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Jeff, this will be our last speaker at 2 minutes and then a minute for everyone after.
Understood. Thank you. Our next speaker is Ann Stenton, followed by Samantha McDonald.
Ann, please proceed with your comment.
Hi there. Sorry, I got kicked out for a second. Can you hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Okay, great. My camera's not working, so I'll put my... There we go. Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for making the time to hear our comments. I know you have a lot of speakers today. I'm Ann Stenton. I'm a mooring permit holder in Newport Harbor. I'm a teacher, and I'm president of the Mooring Association in Newport. We're really grateful to this commission and staff for conducting the Tidelands Management Review in Newport Harbor. As you're aware, mooring holders in Newport pay more per square foot than residential docks or even many commercial operators. In addition to this rate discrimination that you've heard about, though, mooring holders face a lot of restrictions, a lot more oversight, rate hikes, and now we're looking at elimination. Essentially, what I wanted to share today is it feels like mooring holders in Newport are being treated like second-class citizens compared to other Tidelands users, but we're all on the same Tidelands. And I also want to point out that mooring holders do something that other permittees don't. We provide lower cost berthing options, not just for ourselves, but we provide it for visiting boaters as well when we're off voyaging. So it's a public benefit that we provide with the revenue going directly into the Tidelands Fund. Over the last 10 years, there's been a lot of changes in the Harbor Code that really targets mooring holders in Newport Harbor, including that recent proposal to raise the rates between 300 to over 500%. Now there's efforts to take our permits altogether and reclassify us as mooring licenses. When I look at the history of actions towards mooring holders, I have to wonder, what's the real motivation here? It feels like the aggrieved mooring holders are being further punished with a plan to take our permits because we dared to question blatant rate and term discrimination. So today, please, I ask you as commission and staff, as you work on this, please recognize that this unequal treatment goes against the public trust doctrine. Please ensure that these Tidelands are managed fairly for all. If the city is going to convert low-cost, self-maintained mooring permits to high-cost, city-owned mooring licenses, that standard should really be applied across the board to all Tidelands permittees. Please help us protect the mooring permit system in Newport Harbor, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Jeff, next speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just as a reminder, we'll be going down to 1 minute
Correct.
From this point forward for the rest of the Newport speakers. So next up, we have Samantha McDonald, followed by Adam Leverenz.
Samantha, please proceed with your comments.
My name is Sam McDonald. I think my community has already said a lot. I'd like to give back my time to Jennifer Creston, who will be showing a video that my partner made and worked really hard on. He's
Great.
Out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and it's 2 minutes.
Okay, let's go. Thank you.
In that case, our next speaker is Adam Leverenz, followed by Jennifer Creston with the video.
Okay.
So, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hey, commissioners and staff, thank you so much for trying to accommodate public comment. There's clearly a bunch of important issues before you. As far as the Newport Beach issues, given my limited time, I just want to again note that the city revealed this proposal to take the mooring permits from the members of the public on Friday, July 5th, over a major holiday weekend. It was passed by council the following Tuesday. And the rationale that came out in the staff report for that meeting said, following the Harbor Commission's recommendations to the city council, several mooring permit holders contacted the city alleging conflicts of interest and discrimination in rental rates between different users of the tie lands. Accurately phrased, that statement would say dozens of mooring permit holders provided the city concrete evidence of discrimination between tidelands users. The city seems to have figured the way to remedy this is turning mooring permits into mooring licenses, so we're something different and can't complain about being discriminated against. Please help. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Next speaker, and I think that the previous speaker handed her time for a two-minute video. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Okay,
so this will be Jennifer Creston with the video for, I believe, 2 minutes then.
Very good. Jennifer, please proceed. Jennifer, if you're there, do we have, Jeff, do we have the video teed up? Oh, very good. Okay.
I'm currently helping a friend sail across the ocean for their first time, so I do apologize that I cannot address this committee in person. You've heard me speak before. My name is Dr. Michael Spano, and I am a liveaboard sailor in Newport Beach. I wish I didn't have to keep addressing this committee, but it seems that the city of Newport Beach is determined to push forward with changes that will directly affect my ability to live my life. Me and many other mooring permittees dedicate our lives to a maritime lifestyle. People often reminisce about sailing stories of the past, but the fact of the matter is, those stories never stopped happening. For people of humble origins, like myself, owning a mooring permit is the only way we can keep making these stories happen. The city of Newport Beach often vilifies mooring permittees and the Newport Beach Mooring Association, but from our perspective, we are the targets of systematic oppression and discrimination by a local government. I bought this permit with my entire life savings because it was enshrined in federal nautical charts, state charter, and municipal code. I paid sales taxes on it directly to Newport Beach and recognized my permit in public notary. It feels like everything that the Harbor Commission and City Council do regarding moorings is to erode our rights one way or another, often disguised as improvements. I'm sick of all these charades, and I'm asking you, the state agency that granted these tidelands, to demand equal treatment among mooring permittees and pier permittees. Why is it that so much of the city's efforts regarding improvements around the harbor are to reduce my access to the water? These tidelands are not theirs, they are ours, the peoples of California. The tidelands are not a business, they are a legacy, and it's past due for the state to make this fact abundantly clear to the city of Newport Beach. Thank you for listening to my opinion yet again on this matter.
Thank you. That was not Jennifer. So
I think that video, I think Jennifer signed up for to play that video.
Okay, and then do we know the name of the person who spoke? Okay.
I don't, but we can get it for
all
you.
Right, just make sure it's in there.
Michael Spano.
Okay, all right. Okay, next speaker, please, Jeff.
The next speaker and the final speaker on this topic is Jim Palmer. And just so you know, following that, we have two other speakers signed up for public comment.
Okay. Let's keep going.
All right.
1 minute, please, for the last on this topic.
Then Jim Palmer, you're up.
Okay. Jim
Palmer.
2-3 minute version. I'm Jim Palmer. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I'm Jim Palmer, mooring permit holder in Newport Beach. Thank you for this opportunity. At the State Lands Commission's April 14 meeting, I urge State Lands to hold public town halls to hear directly from mooring permittees and other user groups as part of their review of the tidelands management grant for Newport Harbor. I renew that request today because it's the very actions taken by the city staff and Harbor Commission that got us into the mess we see today with appalling rent disparities, to use the SLC's words, between moorings and residential piers, and many other unequal, unfair mooring administrative practices. 60% of mooring permit holders live outside of Newport Beach and have no representation on the City Council or on the Harbor Commission. Therefore, you, the SLC, is our voice. Please find a way to hear directly from us. Our concern is the city will continue to present you with misleading or incomplete information. And I think my 1 minute's up. I have obviously numerous examples to go after, but thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. And Grace, can I ask for at our next meeting to hear about the jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission on this topic? We saw some language about use discrimination. I think it was Chapter 74. So if we could have a report back on staff's view of the State Lands jurisdiction on that.
Absolutely.
May I comment in that same vein?
I'm not sure.
I think, can we take a comment? We can take a comment. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
You were directing staff for this information. I, too, just want clarification. We've heard for a long time this type of comment or concern around Newport Beach, the mooring issue. And I do want real clear clarification on our jurisdiction, our ability on this body. The other thing is if you're going to be bringing us information, I'd be curious to know where exactly is the Newport Beach City Council on this matter. You must be able to have some kind of a historical topic or summary about this, about what's happening. I don't know if we even have the capacity to even call a hearing on it and ask the council members to come join us. The other part that I'm interested in, hold on. The other thing that I'm interested in is I think Newport Beach is part of Ventura County. Is that correct? Love to know where the Ventura County Board of Supervisors are. Orange County. Thank you. Where the Orange County Board of Supervisors are, because this is clearly an issue that has a large swath of the community upset, and they've been diligent and vigilant here in this body. And I was under the impression that we had limited scope and a limited ability to effectuate change, but perhaps we need to start to leverage and use our authority to begin to put a little bit more pressure on the County Board of Supervisors and the City Council so that they are listening to their constituents. The issues that I'm hearing I'm sensitive to. So, Madam, thank you.
Okay. Jeff, next yes. public speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our next public speaker is Stephen Hogange, followed by John Monson. And then I believe we got one back that dropped off earlier, so we'll double-check on that. And so we would have three total speakers still.
Okay, go ahead. 2 minutes for the first two, and if the last person is speaking on something that we've already been hearing on, we'll just do 1 minute. And I want to remind everyone that let's just leave it here with these three. We will have another public comment period at the end of the agenda. But I'm really glad that we're able to get through pretty much everybody so far. And thank you to those who curtailed your comments in order to be able to make room for the others. Jeff, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Stephen Hogange, followed by John Monson.
Stephen, please proceed with your comments.
Good afternoon. And thank you very much for being patient and getting all the way down to me. I'm an attorney who represents a citizen who is trying to protect the public trust against what we see as a transgression by the San Diego Unified Port District. And in that case, the Port District has persuaded the Fourth District Court of Appeal to publish binding precedent that could eliminate court review of any arguably discretionary decision by a local trustee like the Port District, when they violate the public trust, with one exception, and that would be if somebody could race to the courthouse within 30 days of the local trustee deciding to violate the public trust. I'm here today to request that this commission file amicus briefs supporting our effort to reverse this new rule of law, which is currently pending in the California Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has extended the time to decide whether to review the case until July 3rd. Whether this commission agrees with us or the port on the merits of our case is not what's important here. What's important here is that the Port District has established a rule of law that would leave local trustees virtually immune judicial review of any arguably discretionary call that they make, even when it violates the public trust and even when it may affect us for decades to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Jeff, next speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So our next speaker is John Monson. If you are on Zoom, please raise your hand. John Monson.
John, if you can hear us, please proceed with your comment. No?
I don't believe they're here, and it looks like our other speaker also dropped off, so that would
okay.
be the last of our public commenters.
Very good. If anyone attempted to speak and was unable to get through, please be reminded that in a few minutes at the end of this agenda, before we go into closed session, we will have a second public comment period, and you're welcome to sign up for that. And thank you, Jeff and Katie. That concludes our first public comment period. The next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the Commission's meetings of April 2nd and April 14th, 2025. May I have a motion to approve the minutes and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Any objections to a unanimous vote? No. So moved by, well, so we passed. Passed unanimously. All right, Ms. Cato. No, we are sorry, we don't need a roll call vote.
We're good.
The next order of business is the executive officer's report. Ms. Cato, may we have that report, please?
Thank you very much. As my usual, the official acting executive officer's report is available on the commission's website and details the activities that staff has been involved with since our last regularly scheduled meeting of April 2nd. It's been a pretty jam-packed year so far. We are on meeting 4 in 99 days. So, wow. Thank you so much for all of the work, everyone. I do want to share a couple of staff updates. The commission welcomed Daniel He to our Marine Environmental Protection Division, Andy Wang and Matt Wolf, our student assistants, to our Information Services Division. And then we have some new hires coming on board. Emma Shipman will be coming to join our records team. Malathy Thalipin will be joining our accounting team. And Raquel Ramirez has just recently accepted our conditional offer to be the commission's first community engagement specialist. So we're finally getting Jessica a little bit of support on
that's
our
great.
EJ team. And it's timely, I think, that that's moving forward. I also want to call out Jeff Enomoto with our Mineral Resources Management Division, who just recently celebrated 25 years of state service. So, and then I'm just going to do a quick shift over and recognize Billy Clayton. The commissioners did sign a resolution for him. And while Billy is not technically a commission employee or even a state employee, I think he's probably had more involvement in the activities of various commissions than a good majority of us. He has been the technical guru and crew leader for AGP. And we believe he's part of our family. So he has worked alongside this commission for 17 years and has provided critical transparency for and access to the decision-making process that occurs at our commission meetings. During this time, Billy's put in his outstanding technical problem-solving skills and proven his ability to just really work under pressure to keep our meetings running smoothly. Many of us have enjoyed working alongside of Billy, but also getting to know him personally. I apologize that I did not have my wits about me in a timely manner to be able to recognize him prior to his actual retirement, but hopefully he understands and knows that we really appreciate all that he has done for us. It should be noted that he not only is a technical guru, but he's also accomplished and a creative musician, and we just really have loved having him around with us at our commission meetings. So, Billy, I know that you weren't able to be here today, but hopefully we'll be able to get this information over to you, and we'll definitely send you the resolution signed by our commissioners, but we wish you the best as you drive your magic bus off into the hard-earned and adventurous retirement. And then before I close out, I just have to acknowledge that the Lieutenant Governor was right during my last executive officer statement, and that I will continue to act as the executive officer, but I'm just hopeful that we will see white smoke in the near future.
Well, thank you. You're right. It is proving more difficult than picking a pope. Seriously, I want to just recognize Billy. I know he's watching maybe from some fabulous place. And as you noted, Grace, sometimes there's a person that even though it's not necessarily an official staff member, it's someone who is not just a staff member, but really part of this family. I have been now, I'm going into the end of my 7th year serving on this commission. My 4th time, I think, as chair. It is a very close-knit, highly regarded, experienced team with incredible expertise that is tasked by the people of California to oversee 5 million acres of land, including the 3 miles off the coast. And Billy, you have brought not just your expertise in making sure that the public has access across the state and beyond to seeing what we're doing here, to hearing our meetings, to participating in our meetings, but also just being such a wonderful colleague and friend to so many, and of course bringing music wherever you go. So we're very happy. I'm sure that other commissioners may want to say something as well, but just so grateful for your many, many years of service and wish you all the best in what will, I think, be a very long retirement, and we hope that we will see you and you will not be a stranger.
Okay. I'd just like to add, Billy, congratulations, you made it. I look forward to being in your position one day. And I want to wish you much success and happiness in this period of transition.
I actually was able to congratulate Billy in person because he was at the Coastal Conservancy meeting. I believe it was one day before he was ready to set sail on his RV. I guess he's not really set sail, but getting under wheels. So, again, just echoing the congratulations, and hopefully you'll, you know, check back in every so often and let us know about your adventures. So hopefully you're already on your way, but a well-deserved retirement.
Very good. Commissioners, do you have any other comments or questions from the executive director's report? All right. Katie, do we have any public comments for the executive officer's report?
We have no one signed up for public comment on this item.
Very good. The next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Commissioners, are there any items you'd like removed from the consent calendar? Ms. Cato, are there any items which have been removed from the consent calendar?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Consent items 21, 47, 50, and 57, and regular item 63 have been removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time.
Very good. May I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda and a second?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Cohen and a second by Commissioner Perrault. Any objections to a unanimous vote? All right, then a motion passes unanimously. The next order of business will be the regular calendar.
And I believe we have Sherry Pemberton to give the staff presentation.
Item 61 is an update on state legislation relevant to the California State Lands Commission. And Sherry Pemberton is here to make that presentation. Hello, Sherry.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Kunalakis and commissioners. Just a quick overview. The Senate and Assembly Appropriations Committees recently dispensed with their suspense files, holding about 30% of the bills in committee, and this Friday is the House of Origin deadline. So we have a little over 3 months before session ends for the year, and we're anticipating seeing budget trailer bills and policy changes in the next week or so as the legislature and governor negotiates a budget to meet the June 15th deadline. One notable bill that staff was following that was held in the Appropriations Committee is AB 274 by Assemblymember Ransom that would have required the commission to inventory abandoned commercial vessels in the Delta. You will hear more about that topic on the next agenda item when we provide an informational update on that. Other bills that were held include a bill that would have created a geothermal strategic plan and a marine carbon dioxide removal program. Staff are now monitoring around 30 bills, and we've identified a subset of about 8 that we're following more closely. I'll just touch on some of those. Those include AB 1448 by Assemblymember Hart that relates to offshore oil and gas production and would require the commission, when it considers a lease renewal, extension, modification, amendment, to consider additional factors if that is for a lease infrastructure associated with federal leases and offshore oil and gas transportation. That bill, while not specific to the Sable Corporation, was inspired by efforts to restart the Santa Ynez unit. The other bill I also wanted to highlight in that area is SB 542 by Senator Lamone. Also inspired by this effort, would prohibit the restart of an existing oil pipeline that has not been in use for 5 or more years without hydrostatic testing to reduce the risk of an oil spill when it returns to service, and also require public notice and comment before the Office of Spill Prevention and Response issues a certificate of financial responsibility, and that formula for determining financial responsibility is updated every 10 years. Just wanted to move on to our granted public trust lands. We're also following...
Can you tell me, Sherry, what is the timeline for the hearings on those bills? Do you know?
Yes. Those bills are on the floor, Assembly and Senate floor currently, and they'll go over to their other house sometime this week and be heard in probably mid-June to early or mid-July in their policy committees.
Thank you.
You're welcome. On granted lands, we're tracking SB 675 by Senator Padilla that creates a new type of project eligible for CEQA streamlining called a Waterfront Environmental Leadership Development Project. The bill also limits the amount of time the California Coastal Commission has to review CEQA documents for these types of projects. And while this bill doesn't appear to directly affect the commission, it's drafted to only apply to one project, a seaport redevelopment project in San Diego that the Port of San Diego is involved in and that our staff has been working with the port and developer on for many years. So we're just also tracking that bill and trying to ensure that the public trust consistency components aren't compromised by the legislation. The other granted lands bill I wanted to highlight is SB 304 by Senator Aragon. This bill would require the Commission and the Port of Oakland to start to implement by July 2026 mutually agreed on solutions to try to reduce vacancies at Jack London Square, promote economic development, and activate that area and access to the waterfront while maintaining consistency with the port with the public trust doctrine and the granting statutes.
Are we taking any positions on any of this legislation?
No, it's just informational.
Commissioner Cohen?
Thank you. That was the question I was going to ask, if we had taken a public position. You said no, and I wanted to know for what reason. Is that I assume that's a staff recommendation.
Yes. We typically, on these types of bills, we work with a grantee, and I think the commission doesn't typically take a public position. Mm-hmm. It certainly can, but we are just presenting this as informational at this time because we've been working with the port, and we have a meeting with the port also later this week at the site to discuss the bill and walk through Jack London Square and kind of better see what issues they're experiencing and how we can be helpful. There's also a legal agreement that affects the disposition of certain properties at Jack London Square called the stipulated judgment. I think that's another aspect to this that we're also carefully looking at and factors into our decision about whether to recommend that the commission take a position, but just being mindful of that legal agreement and the obligations and commitments in there and how that might reconcile with the legislation.
And could you please remind me again, who is carrying this legislation?
Senator Aragon. The Port of Oakland is a sponsor.
It is.
Yes.
But, okay. Next.
Okay. Sorry. Okay.
I actually had the opportunity to have a briefing from the Port of Oakland about the status of the hotel and the commercial properties, and I would encourage the commissioners to do a briefing with them. It's a pretty dire situation.
We have one scheduled.
Yeah. It's some 50% maximum occupancy, and most of them, some of them are at zero occupancy, and a lot of these vacancies have happened pretty recently, and so they're looking to get some flexibility to be able to use these properties, but of course it's our obligation to make sure that that doesn't conflict with the public trust doctrine. So I think it's just important, Sherry, that legislation that moves forward, that if we think it would conflict with the public trust doctrine, then we probably would want to be taking a position.
Yes, of course, of course. The initial introduced version of the bill had some concerning elements, but the amendments taken in the first policy committee substantially changed the bill and really wove in that importance of adhering to the public trust consistency.
Great. I want to be on just record in agreement with the Lieutenant Governor in terms of should we have the flexibility to take a position that I think we should. That's why these policy bodies that we're on were created to exist. And our position, I think, would go a long way in helping the city of Oakland, helping the port rebuild and reimagine and re-envision what exactly this they could use, how they can best utilize this property.
Yes, yes. And we can also work toward bringing this back to the commission at the August meeting with a recommendation for a position.
It'll be too late by then.
It'll be late, but there's still like a month left in the legislative year. It would be too late for the staff to represent the commission on the bill and the policy committee, but staff could still send a letter formalizing
Is in line with Commissioner Cohen, is there a reason you're not recommending that we take a position on it at this time?
Just the factors I identified earlier, just the legal implications and requirements of the stipulated judgment, and that we're continuing to work with the port. And so that's primarily why we're not recommending that the commission take a position at this time.
I think what I'm going to do is probably make an appointment to talk to Mr. Blackman so we can go over point by point the legal stipulations, where the concerns are, so I can better understand.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And I think that for myself, and just to say on the record, even if you're not recommending we take a position, that having served as a port commissioner in San Francisco and dealt
That's
with
right.
the public trust doctrine in the past, certainly we are bound by law to adhere to the requirements of the public trust doctrine. But generally speaking, it was set up to ensure that the public trust is always held to the highest possible standard. And what they are attempting to do in leasing out these properties and having some flexibility to lease out these properties is absolutely essential to the financial health of the port. They gave me an example. It was something like if a pop-up yoga studio wanted to do classes that were nautically themed, they could do it. But if it were not nautically themed, that they might not be able to. So I just would like to say that just in general, at this time when there are serious challenges with renting retail space and commercial space in general, that however we can support providing the kind of flexibility that will allow them to lease these out is something that I personally, in my own capacity, support.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting to see how ports like San Diego are thriving with very low vacancy rate. And they have gone through a significant rebuild of their leasing up. This is actually even post the pandemic. Let's watch this issue.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much for those comments and feedback. And that's what our goals are, especially when we are meeting with the port this Thursday, is to work with them to provide the flexibility and clarification so they can move toward fewer vacancies.
Commissioner Perot?
Just a technical question. Are you anticipating that they're going to take additional amendments on the bill between the Senate and the Assembly houses also?
Not on the floor.
Okay.
It's hard to anticipate in policy committee. There's a good chance that I think there will be some amendments also to narrow and clarify the geographic scope of the application of the bill.
Okay. That's helpful, just because it'd be helpful to be able to have the most recent information if we're talking about a position.
Yes. Okay. Probably in the next month or so before mid-July.
All right. Very good. Thank you so much. Katie, do we have any public comment for item 61? Are we finished, Sherry?
We can be. I had a couple other bills, but I don't need to. I just wanted to touch on two more bills on
offshore wind
energy, AB 1417 by Assemblymember Stefani, that would require the Energy Commission to create capacity building grants for people to engage in offshore wind energy development and have the commission as a participant in developing the criteria for that. And then AB 770 by Assemblymember Mark Gonzalez relating to billboards. That bill would define customary maintenance for billboards in California. There's a lot of concerns from environmental groups, Surfrider Foundation, Humboldt County, Santa Cruz County, and others about billboards that are in more environmentally sensitive area, public lands, and how the codification of this customary maintenance definition might affect those billboards. So I just wanted to bring that to the commission's attention, not for a recommendation to take a position or provide direction. And then lastly, just to share that our sponsored bill on the Marine Invasive Species Act to enhance transparency and reporting is moving smoothly and is in the second house and will be heard in the coming month.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Sherry.
One last question. What's the legislation dealing with the Oakland port?
That's
SB 304. Thank you. Thank you.
Katie, do we have any public comments for item 61?
Thank you. We have one public commenter signed up to speak, Jennifer Colt.
Jennifer, please proceed with your comment.
Hello. Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for taking my comments. My name is Jennifer Colt. I'm with Humboldt Waterkeeper, and I'm here to talk about AB 770, the bill that proposes to weaken existing regulations on billboards in California. Humboldt Waterkeeper has been working to remove billboards from wetlands around Humboldt Bay for many years, some of which have been successful. I'm happy to report. Next slide, please. The Caltrans Office of Outdoor Advertising regulates billboards in California Of the 6,500 billboards or so in the state, there are at least 160 that are within wetlands. And according to a Caltrans analysis, approximately 700 are on or adjacent to cultural and historic resources. Next slide, please. AB 770 would exempt significant fortifications to aging billboards by expanding the definition of customary maintenance under the Act. Next slide, please. This would undermine the Commission's authority to regulate these non-conforming structures in public trust wetlands and tidelands. Next slide, please. Here are some examples of the types of billboards that would be allowed to be rebuilt without permits under AB 770. On the right is one that is in the water of Humboldt Bay, adjacent to Highway 101. Oh, do I only have 1 minute?
No, well, because it's a new topic. You can proceed, but if possible, stay within the 2 minutes, which we're using today.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. On the left, this is in San Francisco Bay. Next slide, please. Here are just a few more examples. Next slide, please. Many of these are on public lands, and this is one not in a wetland, but on state park lands in Humboldt County, where you can see the billboard is attached to a redwood tree. Next slide, please. AB 770 would allow these old non-conforming structures to be converted to steel structures such as this one without any permitting, environmental review, tribal consultation, etc. Next slide, please. here are some examples of the extent of the disturbance that building these structures involves. AB 770 would allow this type of disturbance in sensitive areas, despite the fact that the California Outdoor Advertising Act was passed in 1970 to halt the proliferation of billboards in scenic areas, wetlands, cultural sites, and public rights of way. Next slide, please. This is a list of some of the regulations that would be undermined by AB 770. I'm not going to read them all, don't worry. Next slide, please. So in conclusion, we urge the commission to oppose AB 770 or potentially consider proposing amendments such as exempting public trust lands or removing the customary maintenance definition from Section 5412. And whether 770 is adopted or not, we suggest that the commission coordinate with Caltrans to require the removal of billboards statewide from public trust wetlands and tidelands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Katie, do we have any other speakers on item 61?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have no one else signed up to speak on this item.
Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions on item 61?
Well, I have a question. Not necessarily on 61. It actually goes back to the executive director's report. May I? Just a point of clarification, but I can wait.
Is there a better time we should? We're a little all over the place today. Yeah. So
maybe we can do that after we take the vote.
After we take the vote on this, that's great. Okay.
There's no vote.
This item is informational. No vote. Right. Before turning to item 62, Commissioner Cohen, you have something.
I just wanted to know, in the executive director's report, you mentioned an environmental justice and tribal affair meeting that happened in Lake County. I just want to know, when was that?
That happened, I want to say May 28th.
May 28th, okay.
It was in late May.
Okay.
And it was when I was on vacation, and I sent Jessica as part of it.
Okay, thank you. I'll follow up with her.
All right. Item 62 is an informational update on the Commission's Abandoned Vessels Program. May we have the staff presentation, please? Hi, Vicki.
Hi. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, fellow staff, agency partners, and members of the public. My name is Vicki Caldwell. I'm a public land manager in the land management division and a member of the amazing abandoned vessel team. I'm here to present information on item 62, an update on the commission's abandoned vessel program. Next slide. I'd like to start with a little background. Waterborne commerce is a public trust consistent activity and is an integral component of the overall success of the California and U.S. economy. Maritime commerce, fishing, recreational boating spread over thousands of miles of California coastline and its interior waterways. One of the side effects of all this activity is that some boats will crash, sink, or simply be abandoned and are no longer useful. Abandoned or derelict vessels, also known as ADVs, have a significant negative impact on the health and navigability of California waters. For years, the Commission has advocated for a state-level program to address abandoned and derelict vessels in state waters. Our first goal is to hold the responsible parties accountable, but that may not always work out. And there are situations where we need to step in and remove these hazards and protect the waterways from long-term damage. Next slide. A significant step was taken in 2011 when the legislature passed SB 595, Public Resources Code 6302, and vested the commission with the power to declare certain vessels abandoned property and take title and remove and dispose of them. In 2018, the legislature passed AB 2441, sponsored by Assemblymember Frazier, which directed the commission to prepare a plan for removal of commercial abandoned vessels in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. In response to AB 2441, the Commission prepared and adopted its Commercial and Abandoned Vessel CADB removal plan in June 2019. At the time, the legislature did not provide funding to implement the plan. The Commission's capability changed when the Budget Act of 2021 allocated a one-time $12 million to the Commission to remove CADVs in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta region. The funds are restricted by statute to the Sacramento-San Joaquin region. The area extends roughly from Sacramento on the north to Lathrop and Tracy on the south, and from the Interstate 5 on the east to the confluence of the Sacramento and San Joaquin rivers on the west. Next slide. The Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta is California's most crucial waterway and ecologic resource. It is the largest freshwater tidal estuary on the west coast, providing important bird and mammal habitat, among other ecological and recreational benefits. It is also home to the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project, which provides drinking water for 29 million Californians and irrigation water for much of the state's 50 billion agriculture industry. While this is a statewide problem, the unique makeup of the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, consisting of more than 700 miles of sloughs and waterways surrounding many levee tracts and islands, makes it a magnet for abandoned and derelict commercial vessels. The Commission's contractor surveyed the legal delta for CADVs from November 2023 through June 2024, spending 19 days on the water, in addition to doing desktop work and analysis. 53 CADV sites were identified, with approximately 80 vessels included. The survey gathered critical information for prioritizing the CADVs. The vessels were prioritized into four tiers based on public navigation, environmental hazards. The Commission has authorized abatement of higher priority, and I think I did not move on to the next slide, sorry. Tier 1 CADVs are vessels known to discharge pollutants. Staff identified 10 of the 53 CADV tiers as Tier 1. Tier 2 are likely to contain pollutants and are unattended and deteriorated. Staff rated 13 CADV sites as Tier 2. Tier 3 CADV vessels contain pollutants and are unattended and deteriorating. Staff rated 20 CADV sites as Tier 3. Tier 4 vessels are not likely to contain pollutants, and they are either are sunk or away from traffic. Staff rated 10 CADV sites as Tier 4. As of now, the program has moved 13 CADVs directly, and others are being actively removed. In addition, the program has caused the removal of at least 10 additional CADVs. Next slide. In January 2023, staff solicited offers for 5 on-call ADV services based on vessel length. Staff awarded 5 contracts as shown here, based on paper submissions and interviews, according to objective scoring criteria. Next slide. Here are some tier one vessels, an unnamed barge with a shop, the Ruthie Lane tug, and a wooden tugboat, and the Vaquero 2, a cattle barge, all removed. Next slide.
Wait, where was this?
We're going to, why don't you let her finish, okay. And then if okay. That's okay.
and then we'll do questions at the end. Is that okay?
Well, my question is relative to the pictures on the screen. I just want to know, where is it?
In the Delta.
Thank
you. Yes. Now, another tier one removal. Here's a sunk barge, and it was a navigation hazard, always being hit by boats going by, and this is in the San Joaquin River. And who would have known this barge weighed 140 tons when it was taken out. Next slide. Another tier one removal. At approximately 300 feet long and 5 decks deep, the derelict cruise ship Aurora was the largest vessel known in the Delta. It sank on privately owned submerged land near the city of Stockton's water intake in May 2024. Program funds of $1 million aided this critical project to secure clean water for over 200,000 residents in an environmentally disadvantaged Delta community. Removal and demolition of the Aurora cost the city approximately $9 million, on top of petroleum and hazardous material response performed by federal and state agencies. Next slide. The Skerry site, a formal commercial operation, is one of the state's highest priority sites. Mr. Skerry died in 2019 without disposing of his vessels and machinery. Removal operations of the DB245 crane, the crane barge Peanut, and an unnamed sunk barge began on May 2nd. Next slide. I'm excited to announce that the removal operation of all of the Skerry site was completed on May 31st, 2025.
That's great.
Next slide. This is what an abandoned vessel team and agency partners have been working for over a decade. We are cleaning up the waterways for future generations, and we are so proud. Next slide. In January 2022, the tugboat Valiant, formerly part of the Skerry site, drifted into the San Joaquin River navigation channel after Delta pirates tried to steal it, creating an emergency. The coalition of state, federal, and local agencies worked with commission staff on the removal operations. Next slide. In October 2022, the tugboat Standard Number 2, also formerly part of the Skerry site, was removed and disposed of after many state agencies involved in floating the vessel and removing hazardous waste. Next slide. Tier 2 Salt River site contains approximately 24 CADV sites in 2022. In terms of abandoned vessels, this is the largest CADV site in the Delta and perhaps statewide. The commission directly removed two Salt River vessels, the crane barge Mink and the tugboat Double Eagle. Under consistent pressure and legal action by the commission, Salt River Construction has removed 10 of its own derelict vessels pursuant to an agreement with the commission. Salt River and Sacramento County District Attorney's Office entered into a consent judgment requiring removal of the remaining Salt River CADVs by November 2025. Program staff here, we are deferring the action until that time. Next slide. Here we see the Mink that was removed and the Double Eagle from the Salt River site. Next slide. Whew. Another substantial accumulation of CADVs and debris in the Northern Delta is known as the Klaus von Wendel compound in Mayberry Slough. This is a class 2 tier priority, and removal work began yesterday on this site. Next slide. Program budget started with $12 million. In fiscal 2021-22, we spent $250,000 on a CADV survey. We spent $321,958 on abatement and removal efforts. Since that time, we have spent another $5,757 on Tier 1 and Tier 2 removals. There's currently $5,670,000, which will be used in the next 19 months to complete outstanding Tier 1 and Tier 2 removals. Next slide. Staff would not be able to complete and achieve our success without our ADV partners. The team includes commission staff, the Sacramento and San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office, California Fish and Wildlife, Office of Spill Prevention and Response, California State Parks, the U.S. Coast Guard, the Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. EPA, California Department of Water Resources, and the Reclamation District 1601. Next slide. In conclusion, California's coastlines, ports, and other waterways are polluted and abandoned with derelict commercial vessels and marine debris, which contain high levels of hazardous materials from both their construction and use. This includes many toxic materials, including solvents, asbestos-containing materials, PCBs, lead paints, batteries, and petroleum products, such as fuel, oil, oily waste, and hydraulic fuels and grease. Abandoned and derelict commercial vessels create navigation, environmental, public health, and safety hazards. These vessels devolve into a dilapidated condition and eventually end up in an unusable state, leading the vessel to be sunk, partially sunk, or a sinking hazard. The program has abated more than 20 CADVs in 3 years. Staff expects to spend the remaining program budgets removing an additional 20 CADVs from Tier 1 and Tier 2 sites. The budget will be exhausted by the end of 2026, probably before Tier 2 sites are cleared. Program activities beyond 2026 will depend entirely upon new funding from the legislature or partner agencies. Next slide. Thanks so much for your attention. That concludes my presentation, and I'd love to introduce my abandoned vessel team. Kevin here is our contract analysis, Andrew in the back, and Jennifer. Amazing. They are wonderful partners to have. Thanks so much.
Okay, we're going to start with public comment on this, and then we are going to go to commissioner comments and questions. And Vicki, you please stay close by because I think we've got a few. All right. Katie, first, any public comment on this item?
We have no one signed up for this item.
Very good. Commissioners, Commissioner Cohen.
I can't believe there's
questions.
No one signing up for this. This is incredible. Yeah, this is amazing. You. To the team back there, you did a great job. Thank you very much on behalf of all of California. what year did you receive? Was it $20
million? $12
million. $12
million. 2021-22 Budget Act.
Okay. And can you tell me who maybe carried that legislation or helped facilitate that transaction? Okay, you don't have to tell me right now.
Frazier did, yeah.
Assemblyman Frazier, I think
yeah,
it's right.
Right before he left.
Great foresight. I'm concerned because we are in really precarious budget times now.
Yeah.
Programs like this, I think, speak volumes to the proper use of taxpayer money. It's a small but mighty team, and you've done an excellent job cleaning up the waterways, making it just beautiful again.
Yeah.
How many more vessels or debris is in existence?
We only did the survey in the Sacramento Delta area.
Got it.
This exists statewide.
Okay.
So it's unknown, but vessels, they sink daily.
Mm-hmm.
Their usable timeline, their life, We don't have any legislation created where funds can be kept for the end of life of a vessel. Maybe if we had DMV taxes.
Question.
Many things that we could do.
At least going back to Scary and his contribution to all of this. What did he do for a living? Do we know anything about him?
He did. He used all of his dredging barges in a dredging operation.
Okay, so he made money off of this,
yes.
Got older, retired, the equipment kind of just began to deteriorate, and then the state ultimately...
he died in
2019. Yes. I heard the presentation.
Yes.
I know,
yeah.
I made a note.
Yeah.
And no family, no nobody else to help foot the bill?
Nothing.
No business?
Nothing. Nothing
wow.
at all.
That's an interesting...
Yes.
That's an interesting way to finish.
Right.
To finish.
Yeah.
To finish out. Okay. Well, just my high compliments.
Yes.
This is a great addition on the agenda. Thank you very much for sharing it. Thanks for getting it on here. This is fantastic.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Commissioner Cumble.
Oh,
I mean, sorry.
It's okay.
Bro.
No, I just. It's fine. It's fine.
Michelle.
No problem. I just wanted to echo the compliments of from the commissioners to
Malia.
The team. Yes. I don't know who we're talking about. From the controller. Regarding this, I had an opportunity almost a year ago, Sacramento Delta Conservancy, we took a tour and we were able to see some of these that were just sitting out there. Some of them half in the water, some of them, you know, I don't know, home to who knows what kind of critters. And so it's nice to see that there has been not just progress, but very swift progress.
Yes.
Really appreciate you bringing this forward and would like to continue to sort of see the progress. I know that this is for the Sacramento Delta specifically. I'm just wondering, and I'm going to voice this question knowing that the answer is probably like we don't know. Is there any other federal funds that are coming in for any of these other, maybe not for the Sacramento Delta since that's very state specific, but there's other waterways where we're going to be having probably some of these same issues. Is there any, do we know of any other sources other than partners in state that we can leverage some of this resources to remove?
We do know that NOAA, they provide a grant for marine debris removal. So we've applied for that once and didn't get it. Mm. But we'll certainly apply each time it's available for us to apply.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything else we just don't know of?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. And I'll just kind of pull this up at the end. So many years of concerns over debris in the Delta in particular, but all along our waterways. Without a reliable income stream to deal with what you recognize is a problem that is not going away, which is people getting tired of their boats or a pier or other debris that they happen to have out on these waterways and just abandoning them. I really encourage staff to think about what our options might be going forward for a reliable income stream, whether it has to do with licensing, whether it has to do with partnering with marinas, which, you know, whether it goes to registration of commercial boats or privately owned boats, where once people buy one, there is some kind of a recognition that that boat is going to end up somewhere eventually, and that it is most likely to be somewhere in California that at least has overlapping jurisdiction with state lands. So I really think it's important that we not rely on a windfall budget to get some dollars to be able to do this work, but really be able to think about a long-term regular fund in order to be able to ensure that your very able team has the ability to continue to do this cleanup.
We sure will.
All right.
Check that. Thank you guys so much.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, Ms. Cato, what is the next order of business?
I made an error, and I apologize. We should have called for a public comment if there was any for item 60 prior to us moving to the next agenda item. So I just wanted to check in with Katie and Jeff to see if there's any speakers for item 60, which is an informational item for real estate negotiations.
We had an Emily Engel signed up to provide comment, but she is not showing up on our attendee list, so I think we can move on.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
My apologies, and, Chair.
Members of the public are also encouraged to submit information to us as well through email or on the website. Okay, Ms. Cato, the next order of business.
The next order of business would be our second public comment period.
Thank you. If anyone would like to address the commission on a matter that is not on today's agenda, please come to the podium or raise your Zoom hand. I will call on those who are here in person first, and then we will move to those who are joining us virtually. And we will keep this public comment period to 1 minute to account for the large number of people who we've had address the commission already today. Katie, please call on the first person who'd like to make a public comment.
We do not have anyone on the attendee list or in the room raising their hand at the moment.
Wonderful. So we managed to get everyone taken care of. They didn't have to wait. Marvelous. Okay. That concludes our second public comment period. Do any of the commissioners have any other comments or questions? Ms. Cato, what is the next order of business?
Our next order of business is our closed session. Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7. Allows a state body to discuss real property negotiations in closed session, provided that before the closed session, the state body in open session identifies the real property concerned and the person or persons with whom the negotiator may negotiate. In accordance with this requirement, I announce that the commission will conference in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the following item. Item 60 addresses four applications for assignment of leases governing the use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters, including the Elwood Pier and two mooring buoys offshore Santa Barbara County. Negotiating parties are the State Lands Commission, ExxonMobil, and Sable Offshore Corporation. Under negotiation are price and terms. The lease numbers are PRC 4977, PRC 5515, PRC 6371, and PRC 7163.
Thank you very much, Grace. We will now adjourn into closed session. Will the public please clear the room? Thank you. I call this meeting back to order. Ms. Cato, is there anything to report from closed session?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Consistent to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, the Commission met in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the assignment application from ExxonMobil to Sable Offshore Corporation of four leases that support the Santa Ynez unit offshore Santa Barbara County.
In addition to that report out, the Commission has additional news to report out that it would like to make a conditional offer to Dr. Matt Dumlau for the position of the Executive Officer of the State Lands Commission. And that vote has been finalized. Thank you.
Congratulations. And that concludes the open meeting. We are adjourned. Thanks, everyone. Now you can go to the ladies' room.